they gave us the option of choosing something to teach, which is terrible because there's so many choices. But I was able to whittle it down to one because I had no other choice. And the passage that I want to teach is one that I find to be incredibly meaningful. I think it's a beautiful expression of Torah. And also, we're going through this process of getting smicha. It's a good reflection of many of the feelings and emotions that I had through this process. And I would love to share that with all of you. And on top of it, one of my favorite things to do when I teach is use parallel sources, because I am trained as a scholar of Talmud. And one of the things that we like to do best is compare sources and compare versions of sources. So the Midrash that we're going to read together actually has two different versions. So we're going to read them through and think together about what the meaning of those two different versions are. The focus of what we're going to talk about here, I know I gave it a very fancy title on the multivocality of Torah, but the real crux of what this is about is, why is it hard to learn Torah? Why is it challenging to learn Torah? So I have a captive audience of people that probably love learning Torah. So why is it hard? You could just call it out, anyone.
Language.
Okay, the language is hard.
Quantity.
The quantity is hard. There's so much of it.
Different era of values.
Okay, great. The Torah that we study might reflect different values than our own. What else is challenging?
There's no time.
There's no time. What?
Lousy teachers.
Lousy teachers, that is true. That can make studying Torah challenging. Yeah?
Knowing all the inner references.
Yes.
You don't know the whole Torah.
Yes, that's the problem. When you start studying Torah, you have to know the whole Torah in order to understand it. So where do you even start? Yeah?
The fun Sarah Agra, you know? No pain, no gain.
It can be very challenging, right? It can be very difficult. Great. So with those questions in mind, with those challenges that we talked about in mind, I want to take a look at, well, what do Chazal think is hard about learning Torah? Okay? And they take this verse from Kohelet. Okay, would somebody want to read for us the verse from Kohelet?
The sayings of the wise are like goads.
Okay, goads. What are goads? This is what's great. Yeah, this is what's great about this passage. Yeah, it's one of those things, right? So a goad is what you hit the animal with to make it go.
Like nails fixed in are the sayings of the masters of collections. They were given by one shepherd.
Excellent. What does this mean? I have no idea, right? You have a successful verse that you're working with when you look it up, and the translation in the JPS Tanakh says, meaning of Hebrew uncertain. So that's how you know you're working with a text that it's worthwhile trying to dig into. Okay, now, clearly Chazal loved this verse, because how often is it in the Torah, or excuse me, in the Tanakh, that you get a verse that talks about Chachamim? Right? Here's the one. Divrei Chachamim kedarbonot. Okay, so what we're going to do is we're going to look at this Midrash as it appears in the Bavli, which is going to be the late version that we're going to see. I said we're going to look at two parallel sources. So we're going to look at the later version first, out of order. See how it interprets the verse. We'll talk about it together, and then we'll see some other ways of interpreting. Okay, so what's going to happen is, the way the Midrash is going to work, it's going to take each phrase within the verse, piece by piece, and provide an interpretation of that verse. Okay, so let's do another volunteer. Who would like to read?
Why are the matters of Torah compared to a goad? To tell you that just as this goad directs the cow to her furrow to bring forth life to the world, so too the words of Torah direct those who study from them from the paths of death to the paths.
Okay, so divrei chachamim kedor bonot. How is it that the words of the sages are like goats? What do?
They bring life in some way.
Okay, they provide you with direction, right? So how is the metaphor working? They provide you with direction because if you're going to veer off the path, what happens? You get a hit, a zets, and then you go back in the right spot. Okay? So the words of sages are there to keep you on track.
What is this to bring life to the world?
Right. That, so what do we think? That's a good question. Okay. Yeah. Oh.
Well, if a cow eats well, you can milk it. I mean.
Right. Well, this seems right. The metaphor here seems to be about plowing. Okay. So maybe it has to do with the fact that the action that's happening is one that's going to be that the plowing is going to work and be successful. Well, ox, whatever. And the other aspect of this is it's explaining to you how high the stakes are. Mm. Right? In the eyes of Chazal, what happens if you veer off the path? That is bad. Right? So something that keeps you on the path, that's going to keep you going in the right way, and then that will ensure that there is life. Right? So that is the first...
It's a bad metaphor.
Okay, great. Why is it a bad metaphor?
Because you're arguing the cow's not getting life.
Right.
The cow, at best, you could say, is providing life for other people, whereas the nimshal
right.
supposedly is... You don't learn Torah so that other people get life.
You learn Torah so that you can.
Get life.
Right, great.
Well, but you could make a case that you learn Torah so others do get life because you're teaching them Torah.
So, okay, good. So that assumes the next step, right? Why is it that we're in this process of learning Torah? Is it so that we know the right path to go on, so that we can then show others the right path to go on, and then it reproduces, which is a part of the metaphor that we're going to come back to in two steps. Okay, so who wants to do the next part?
Just as this code is movable, so too matters of Torah are movable.
That's a question, right? Is it true, then, if we're making this metaphor to the end?
Talmud Lamar nails.
Correct. If we're taking this metaphor to the end, a goad is pliable. Does that mean that we can move around and do whatever it is that we want with words of Torah? Talmud Lamar
nails.
Which means?
Fixed.
Okay, so on the one hand... This goad helps us move on the path. On the other hand, don't get confused that this is something that's can move around, right? The nails are fixed. But that opens up another problem. Because if we're comparing it to nails, then what happens?
Then Torah's fixed.
Right. And keep reading.
If so, just as this nail is diminished in size and does not expand, so two matters of Torah are diminished and do not expand?
Right. Each step in the metaphor, we explain, then we've created a problem. Nails don't seem to be a great metaphor for Torah because they're too small. They're fixed, they're small, nothing happens. Maybe it'll give you a good hit, but beyond that, it doesn't get you much out of it. Yeah.
Doesn't it mean that they get worn out, but they get reduced?
Right.
So over time, they get worn down.
Right. The more you're going to use the thing, it's going to erode away. Right. Yes. So Talmud Lomar.
Fixed Nitu'im, just as this plant, Niti'ah, flourishes and multiplies, so too matters of Torah flourishes.
Right. What an amazing flip. Right. We went from like this broken piece of wood that's used to hit, and the rabbis are able to flip it around and turn it into a metaphor of growth. Right, moving from something that's very strict to keep you on the path, using the wordplay of nitu'im, you can turn it into something that creates an idea of growth and reproduction. Now comes the next part.
Of the masters of collections, these are Torah scholars who sit in many groups, asufot, and engage in Torah study. These render impure, and these render pure. These prohibit, and these permit. These deem invalid, and these deem valid.
Okay, this is a very important part. I'm going to focus and emphasize this point because we're going to use it to compare to what we're going to see in the parallel text. What is being described here?
Law.
How?
Well, these are the categories of law.
Which are? Permitting, forbidding, pure, impure.
Yeah.
Okay. What about the interaction between them? It's machloket, right? It's opposition. What can we imagine is happening here? What are the Baalei Asufot? They're Chavrutot who are doing what?
Disagreeing
with each other. Right? We can imagine the sound of a Beit Midrash here of different people. This person says it's Tameh. This person says it's Tahor. This person says Asur. This person says Mutar. And we're used to this, right? Because when we think about Torah, we imagine and think about machloket, and we imagine hearing the symphony of all of these voices as they interact with each other. But that's not necessarily the way that we might think about interacting with it, right? Because, in a sense, what the Midrash is going to reveal here is that this could also be very dangerous and challenging.
Lest a person say, since these render impure and these render pure, these prohibit and these permit, these deem invalid and these deem valid. Now, how can I study Torah?
Okay, what is the question that's happening here?
Since the study of Torah can take me to any conclusion, what's the point of the study?
Why am I doing this? Right? Every single person in this room can come up with a different explanation. And what are we going to say? You're all right. Right? So you can say it. Everybody knows it. So Elu ve'elu. Divrei Elohim Chayim. Right? This is multivocality at its best, or perhaps at its absolute worst. Because what's the anxiety that comes around saying Zeomer mutar, Zeomer asur, Zeomer pasul, Zeomer... This is chaos. We love embracing the idea that there are so many different voices of Torah, but it's also something that's incredibly terrifying. Because how do you know what's right? How do you know what the path is to be on if there are so many different paths to be on? So on the one hand, we hear this and we feel very inspired by the idea of saying, look at all of these different voices of Torah within the Beit Midrash. But there's someone there who could turn around and look at this and say, why bother? Why am I doing this? This is totally ridiculous. Tell me what it is that God wants me to do, and I'll do it. But don't tell me that this is true and that is true, because they can't both be true because they're opposites. So what's fascinating here, to me, is that Chazal are saying this right out in the open. Right, this isn't an opinion that's being thrown out of the Beit Midrash as totally illegitimate. This is a text that's engaging with what do people who do study Torah do? They think about this question and they're concerned about it. But the Midrash continues with an answer. Okay, so what's the answer that the Midrash gives? Go ahead.
Scripture states that they are all given from one shepherd. One God gave them. One leader set them from the mouth of the blessed master of all creation, as it is written, and God spoke all these words.
What's the answer?
It's from one God.
Right. We keep reading in the verse. What's the last word of the verse? Nitnu meroe echad. Don't worry. It's not chaos and mayhem. This is how God intended it. God gave all of these words, and they were all given to... Parnas Echad, Moshe. This is the word of God that has come directly down to Moshe, and this is what God intended when God revealed the Torah. You don't hear this and turn around and say, this is mayhem, everyone's disagreeing with each other. You hear the sounds of the Beit Midrash and you say, Kulan miroe echad nitnu. This is all Torah, this is all true, this is all what it means at the same time. Right, that is what many of us understand to be the hallmark of Chazal. They want those voices in the Beit Midrash to be heard. They want that chorus, they want that symphony, and they're not turned away by it because of a concern for this can't be right, this can't be true, God has to mean one thing. Okay, so this text is reflecting an anxiety of studying Torah, which we mentioned at the beginning of there's too much information. There's too much, there's too many disagreements. It doesn't even seem like there should be a point in starting on this process. And the Midrash wants to come and reassure you and say, Kulan miroe echad nitnu, and give you the advice that closes the passage. So what is the advice that closes the passage?
So to you.
All right.
It's like a funnel. And acquire for yourself an understanding heart to hear both the statements of those who render impure and those who render pure. those who prohibit and those who permit, those who deem invalid and those who deem invalid.
Okay, what's the advice? Take it all in, right? Make your ear a gigantic funnel and take all of that information in. Celebrate it, recognize it, understand it, begin to hear the sounds. It's not discord, right? You need to train yourself to take in all of that information and hear it as a symphony. Celebrate the multivocality that is Torah. Take it all in. Recognize that it all comes from God. And understand every aspect of it. Understand who says permits and why. Understand who prohibits and why. Right? One of the things that we spent so much time in the Kollel doing is we didn't open up the Shulchan Aruch, right? Rav Eitan would never have allowed us to do this. Open up the Shulchan Aruch, see what the ruling is, and then just spit it back. The project of what it is that we did and the way that we assessed our learning was for every single siman, did we understand all of the voices that were present? Did we understand all of the machlokot? My niece asks me all the time questions. What is the ruling in this matter? And I always say to her, it's a machloke. Right? A very unsatisfying answer. Okay, but that's what we need to do. We need to hear these voices and understand, and not just know what they are, also know where they come from. Yeah?
There's also an important statement being made here about the authority of the Oral Torah.
Say more.
The essence of each opinion of the Machloket goes back to the Ro'en, not only the verse that they are commenting on,
right,
but the understanding of the verse.
Correct.
Well,
correct.
It's just as authoritative as...
Correct. There's the Midrash that maybe some of us know from Kohelet Rabbah, which, based on the verse, Ein Chadash Tachat HaShemesh, says, even that which a student will say before their teacher is Halacha LeMoshe MiSinai. Meaning everything that ever was taught, everything that will be taught, everything that is taught, is Halacha Moshe MiSinai, which gives us this very maximalist understanding of the authority of oral Torah. Yes, go for it. Okay, this is now a test for all of you to see whether or not you're ready to become academic scholars of Talmud. What's the difference between what's happening here? Right, we'll look at it right there. There are those who sit in groups and render impure, impure, and pure, pure. What is impure in its place, and what is pure in its place? Right, you could slip past it very easily if you're only looking at it through the eyes of the Bavli. But in this earlier version in the Tosefta, there is no machloket here. What are all of these people doing? They're sitting and learning together, and there's consensus. They sit and learn, and they say, "This is pure. This is impure." There's no, "I think that's pure, you think it's impure, I think that's permitted, you think..." No, this is pure, this is impure. But now it gets tricky. We talked about what's happening in the Beit Midrash is not machlokim. Everyone is agreeing. But now, all of a sudden, we have what seems to be what? The same question of, why bother learning Torah? Well, I know why I want to learn Torah, because everyone agrees and I know how to do it. Right? So there's something weird happening here in this text. Yeah.
In one of them, it's like a contemporary machloket. The other one is going back a generation.
Explain what you mean.
I mean, is he saying that, okay, you might agree, but a long time ago, Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai.
Okay, good. Great.
Like that, I'm uncomfortable with. You know, it's like,
oh, okay.
Moving that.
Okay, so what it's saying is, I'm okay with what's happening now.
Right.
But if we go back, right, whenever it is, right, but let's say a generation, Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel did have a machloket. Yeah, any other thoughts? Yeah.
Well, in the first one, the people who disagree are in one room. In this one, they seem to be separated. Like, you know, Beit Shammah has got their consensus in their space, and Beit Hillel has their consensus in their space. And so how do you actually progress if you've got two people who disagree and don't even talk to each other?
Okay, so what you're saying is maybe the Lama Ani Lamed Torah is, why do I want to work in a space where no one's talking to each other?
Yeah.
Right? I'd prefer some kind of communication.
Yeah.
Great. Okay. Now the tricky part here is, what's the deal with the Dvarim, Hadvarim, Ela Hadvarim, Kol Hadvarim?
So, thus the person said to himself, since Beit Shammai renders impure, Beit Hillel renders pure, meaning, since we know that Beit Shammai, it's always going to be...
They always say no, and Beit Hillel always say yes.
Yeah, right. So I already know what...
So I don't need to know anything, right? I'll just say, oh, whatever, does it? Beit Shammai says no, Beit Hillel says yes, and then it's fine, because we know Beit Hillel is right, and we move on.
No, not just that he's right, but with Machmir and his
making. Right. Okay, good.
We know the personalities. We know the...
So great, but you're raising something which is like, okay, and then what? Why would a person then say, I don't want to learn? That doesn't seem to be a problem. Yeah?
If you're operating under the assumption that every piece of Torah that's ever spoken falls under the umbrella of Misinai,
right,
then that's a response to that question in my mind.
Right, which is?
Because we can always be adding to whatever the...
What's already in the past.
Or that our words today also matter.
True.
Because they're additions to...
Okay, but then why do I have the anxiety about why do I want to learn? Right, we still have to explain that point. Right, there are two challenging things here. One, what's with the anxiety about why I'm learning? And two, what's the deal with this? The words, these words, all the words.
Well, it seems like you don't know what words they are.
Well, meaning like what verses they're referring to.
The same thing. But you're not sure which version you're actually hearing.
Good. Great. Let's keep reading. We're going to come back to this question, and let's keep reading.
El echad bran, pranas echad mitanan, vibon kol masim baruch hu
amru. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's because I just put it in the automatic thing. So.
You're tricking me.
Yeah. What can I tell you? Okay. What's the advice that we get at the end of this passage? Make your heart into chambers.
Protect Torah.
How?
Inside contradictory opinions at the same time.
Okay. How do you see that in the metaphor? I'm being totally unfair here, but how do you see that in the metaphor?
You put the Tameh in this room and you put the
Tahor in this room. Great. Okay. So in a terrific article written by Shlomo Nae, who's a professor at Hebrew University, he wrote a wonderful article about memory in Sifrut Chazal, going through examples of metaphors of memory and comparing it to modes of memorizing information in the ancient world. And one of them is this idea of libcha chadrei chadarim. You turn your heart, which is your mind, into like a mind palace. And in that mind palace, you organize the information based on similar terms, similar ideas, similar things. Okay? So the advice that comes at the end of this passage is organize your learning in such a way that you can memorize it, and put them into different categories, go into different chambers of your heart. Now, the amazing thing that he also talked about when analyzing this passage is he does some great textual criticism, which gets me always very excited, and I'll share it with you in a second. And one of the key points is understanding what does this mean, ish ploni oser, ish ploni matir, ish ploni metameh, ish ploni metaher. Okay, so let's take a quick look at Sifrei Dvarim. Does someone want to read that passage?
They will wander to seek the word of God, and they will not find it.
Okay, another expression of anxiety about studying Torah. People are going to want to study Torah, and they're not going to be able to find the words of Torah.
Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai says the Torah will be forgotten from Israel. Is it not written in volume 31:21, for it will not be forgotten from the mouth of the descendants? Rather, so-and-so prohibits, so-and-so permits, so-and-so renders impure, so-and-so pure, and they will not find a clear teaching.
Okay, so what's fascinating about this passage is people have, scholars have tried to read this in the backdrop of the catastrophe of the destruction of the temple, right? The bad place that Torah study is in, that people are going to run around looking for Torah and they're just not going to know what's right. The suggestion is actually to read this passage as a celebration of where Torah study has come. It's not that there's going to be a crisis of no Torah. What's the crisis that's happening in this verse? Why are they not going to find it? There's too much Torah. Ish ploni oser, ish ploni matir, ish ploni metameh, ish ploni metaher. These are rulings that exist that are out there, and they're not going to find something clear because no one's come along and organized them. So reading this anxiety back into the passage in the Tosefta, what it's really talking about here is an anxiety of information. There's too much Torah. And what is it our responsibility to do? Aseh libcha chadarim chadarim. You need to make your heart or a library, right? You have to turn your heart into a library in order to preserve and take in the information. Going back to the passage of the Tosefta, the terrific read that happens here is you have to move the passages around a little bit. Okay. Originally, what we had before us was a line-by-line interpretation of the verse in Kohelet. So the first part was just like we saw in the Bavli. Then, Ba'alei Asufot, masters of collections. These are the ones who sit in many groups. Then you have to skip to Nitnu Meroe Echad. Okay, so the next part in the Midrash is the next part in the line. What is Nitnu Meroe Echad? They were all given from one person. Okay, but it's not an anxiety here about multivocality and me telling me they were all given from one person. It's just, that's the next step. Then, put the Shema Yomar Adam as an independent passage afterwards, and it's a different thought. Lest a person might say, there's too much Torah. Beit Shammai says this, Beit Hillel says that. Beit What am I supposed to do? Talmud Lamar, Dvarim, Hadvarim, Ele Hadvarim, Kol Hadvarim. All of these words appear in the Torah, and you need to organize them in your mind in the way that it just simply, you can simply organize that thing, that those words. There are a lot of words in the Torah, but if you create mnemonics, and you create techniques to understand things, then you are able to tackle the information. I can put all of the Dvarim stuff here, I can put the Kol Hadvarim stuff here, I put the Ele Hadvarim stuff here, and that makes me able to organize these things. And the advice that's given to me is, if my anxiety is, how am I going to remember all this Torah? Right, the way that I dealt with it was I made note cards, right? In order to pass my exams, I had to make hundreds of note cards in order to memorize all the information, right? But the idea is, celebrate the amount of Torah that is out there, but organize it in such a way that it becomes something that you can take in, that you can digest, that you can understand. Because otherwise, you'll be too overwhelmed by the vast amount of material that exists to be able to actually internalize.